to you from Trilix Studio. This is the Trilix Podcast, your deep dive into all things marketing.
I am your podcast host, Michaela Smith, and I am thrilled to be here today to learn from Steve, president and owner of Peak Agency, about how and why brands work with hired talent. Thanks for joining us, Steve.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, and we are also here with Cole Bates-Norum, senior producer and editor on Trilix's video team. Thanks for joining us.
Happy to be here. Thanks.
Yeah. So, Steve, we are talking obviously about why brands work with hired talent, how that kind of takes your creative up several notches, all of the various benefits that that brings. But I really want to know a little bit of your background, too. How did you first get into this industry?
Sure. Yeah. I kind of fell into it more than anything else. I mean, I went to school for business and I always knew I wanted to work for myself, but yeah. I never really knew exactly what I wanted to do. And a good friend of mine that I met in college, grew up in Wisconsin, and he actually worked for a talent agency in Wisconsin. Mm. And it was kind of always his passion to start a talent agency. And so the two of us kind of became friends. I was studying business, and he was studying something different. And one day he came to me and said, "What do you think about opening a talent agency?" And I said,
Yeah,
all right. That sounds cool. I just had my first son was just born, and my wife's like, "You're crazy," and all that good stuff. But
yeah.
I kind of fell into it. And I had a little background in the business. I mean, I did a little bit of theater in high school.
Okay.
I was more of an athlete than anything else. So I didn't really focus on theater or acting or anything like that. But I had done some of that work. So I knew the industry and I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
But I didn't know how much I'd love it until I really got into it. So we started an agency in 2001, which is the Peak Agency. And then about 3 years into it, I ended up buying out my business partner and I kind of took over in, I think it was 2004. And I've been running it myself ever since. But yeah, I mean, once I got into the industry and started working on, I call it behind the scenes because I'm not really in front of the camera or any of that kind of stuff. I realized how much I loved doing it and got to work for myself. So that fulfilled that dream there. So
that's awesome. So it sounds like you spend at least some time, behind a camera. How is it? Is it a little bit daunting to not, feel like that's your full basis, that you know how to work with talent, who is behind the camera a lot? I mean, I'm sure you've learned over two decades how to do that, but that might have been daunting at the start.
Oh, yeah, a little bit. I mean, I didn't have to know a lot of it. I needed to know more about what talent needed mm-hmm. to know more than anything else, of course.
Yeah.
But I didn't love being in front of the camera, so I'm glad that I'm not doing that. Like mm-hmm. it was definitely not my thing, and I realized that when I got a chance to kind of help book talent and put them in front of the camera. But yeah, I don't spend as much time around sets or around the camera, even behind a camera, as much as I'd like to. A lot of what I do day to day is more email and phone calls and
yeah.
stuff like that. But I don't get to the sets as much as I used to. But yeah, I mean, having that knowledge is certainly helpful so that you can relay to talent what to expect and what they need to know. So,
and that's a good point, is you are, helping to manage that relationship between talent and clients. So, that is really a huge part of the business as well.
Yes. Yeah, for sure. I mean, I tell everybody I have two sets of clients, and one being the companies that hire the talent, but talent also like to be referred to as clients as well. And they really are. It's just, it's hard to kind of, there's a fine line between the two, of course, and you do have to kind of, try to keep everyone happy if you can.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's a big part of the job, yes.
Yeah. So as you started out, how did you help build that talent pool?
It was a lot of recruiting and meeting and interviewing talent. I mean, over 21 years I've been doing it, I've probably interviewed 12,000-13,000 people for the industry.
Wow.
Meeting with them, trying to determine what kind of ability they have in front of the camera, where their, goals are and what their passions are as far as what do they want to achieve from being in the industry. Yeah, I mean, it was quite a process for building up talent. I mean, one big mm-hmm. thing that I did was I ended up buying out a competitor. So, that helped a little bit. There was an agency that was established in Des Moines back in the mid-80s, she reached out at one point and said, "Hey, I want to retire and, are you interested?" And so we talked and I ended up buying out her agency. And now, to this day, 18 years later, she still works for me. So, it's been fun. But that was a big game changer for me, was when buying out a competitor in town that, had some established clients and actors that they've worked with since, the mid-80s. And
right.
so I was able to kind of boost that roster of talent, immediately without having to,
sit experience.
And interview people.
Yeah, right.
yeah. Yeah, people that were already experienced. So,
yeah.
Were there any hiccups or kind of false starts, obstacles onboarding that roster of talent into your agency?
No, you know, I mean, I think, and maybe I got lucky, but it was all pretty smooth. I mean, you know, talent understood it. I mean, you know, the gal that owned the agency before, she had a really great relationship with all the models and actors that she represented. So, you know, they understood her situation and knew that she was ready to kind of get out at her age. And so I think they were thrilled to just have the opportunity to still continue to do it and, you know, have somebody advocating for them and working on their behalf. And so, you know, it was actually all very, very smooth and went pretty easily. So, yeah.
How many client or talent do you have on the roster right now?
It fluctuates. I mean, right now, I would probably say between 1,100 and 1,200.
Wow.
I know, and it sounds like a lot. Every time I tell people that, it's the same reaction. It's like, whoa. You know, it's actually pretty average and maybe even on the small side for a market like this. And that's one thing about the industry and some of the misconceptions about the business is that, you know, people don't realize, like, we cover a lot of the state. So we're not like a, you know, Des Moines is not a market where we focus Des Moines only. You know, like, if you're Chicago, you're Chicago. Like, you're not booking work all over Illinois. You're pretty much focused Chicago market. And so, you know, for a lot of the work that we're doing, there's demands for 20, 30, 40, 50 talent at a time. And so, you know, everyone wants to have 3-4 options for each role, right? Mm-hmm. So that means, you know, for one job, we could potentially need 400 or 500 people for them to be able to see and choose from for talent.
I didn't think about that, yeah.
And so it's a, you know, it's also a market where, you know, people aren't doing this full-time. And because the actors are doing this part-time or as a hobby, not everybody's always available. So you got to have backups to the backups. And, you know, you want to have those backups be just as talented as the first choice or the initial choice. So, you know, it starts to add and build to that roster of talent. And you know, a lot of markets similar to like Iowa, you can go to Minneapolis or Kansas City, the agencies there, they'll have, you know, just as many, if not more talent. But also we rep all ages. So I start at age 4 and up. We don't represent babies or toddlers generally. Mm-hmm. And then I think my oldest is 91 now that we have in our roster.
Awesome.
So
yeah,
I mean, we have all age groups and of course all ethnicities and, you know, all different types of, you know, walks of life from people that we represent. So it really starts to, you know, build that roster up real quickly. And in addition to that, families. So, you know,
right.
I would count families in that too. And so that really adds to the numbers. But yeah, I mean, it fluctuates between 1,000 and, you know, 1,300 generally. I mean, people leave and get out of the business, mm-hmm. and we add new faces. And so it's kind of a constant, you know, up and down as far as the roster size. But yeah, but each person I've met with personally, you know, individually, I know who they are. I know about everything about them. And so it's easy. Like, somebody says, hey, I need somebody this age or, you know, this look or whatever, I can usually think through my head,
oh, yeah.
Yeah, here's who I'm thinking would be great and, you know, that kind of stuff. So, yeah.
You talk about this market. Is that just the greater Des Moines area? How far outside of Des Moines do you typically field talent?
We represent talent all over the Midwest. Now, I have people that are, you know, in major markets all over the country, and that's mainly because they leave Iowa and they relocate there. If somebody is submitting to me from, you know, let's say Orlando, I mean, we're generally not going to probably take them on as a client or represent mm-hmm. them, you know, unless they have the ability to travel easily and they maybe have some ties to Iowa or something like that. But typically within usually about 4 hours driving distance is about as far as we'll go with talent that we represent. I mean, I have some from Chicago, but they're actors that have many, many years of experience that don't mind the travel. They do this full time, you know, so they have the flexibility and the option to be able to come to Iowa when they need to. So, but most everybody I represent is within the state, you know, within the state of Iowa, or I would say Quad Cities, Omaha, because, you know, they're close to us. So
yeah.
Omaha is a market that we tend to see quite a bit of work in because it's only an hour and 45 to 2 hour drive from here. So,
sure. Yeah.
But yeah, I represent models and actors from Minneapolis, Kansas City, some St. Louis. That's a little far, but yeah, and then all over the state. So.
And how far does the talent travel? I mean, I guess it's dependent on what they want to do as well, but would they travel to like an Orlando if a client wanted that?
Oh, 100%, yeah. In fact, we've done a few projects recently like that where we shot something locally for them and then they ended up, you know, shooting a scene or something in another state. And actually Florida was one place that they went.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, well, we need a specific location and Florida is where it's at. We had something in Georgia recently and these, you know, these are clients that are based out of Iowa, but they mm-hmm. just need a different location or just a change of scenery or something like that. So yeah, it happens. I mean, and most talent are always willing to travel, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, they love this industry so much that it doesn't bother them to travel mm-hmm. as long as it makes sense. You know, I mean, they got to be able to justify the time commitment and the the money, absolutely. What they're getting paid and that type of stuff. But yeah, they don't have any trouble with traveling. I mean, I'm not dealing with a lot of long distance jobs. You know, most everything tends to be in Iowa, but yeah, when the opportunities do come up, they don't mind it. I mean, I have a bunch of actors submitting auditions today for a project that shoots in Miami in a week. So, you know, they're all for it. Like, it's a great opportunity for them. And a lot of times they're like, hey, it's almost like a free vacation. So,
right. Especially from Iowa to Miami.
Oh, you know, yeah.
That's
yeah.
not a hard sell.
It's not like going to like, you know, Canada in the middle of winter or, you know, somewhere like that.
Right. Yeah.
So some of our listeners might not know what representing talent means. Can you give us a general overview of what your duties are and what that entails to represent a talent?
Yeah, I mean, basically, it just means that we officially sign them into an agreement. I call an agreement, not a contract, which I can talk more about in a second. But it basically means that we take them on as a client and are willing to work on their behalf to find them jobs. And then my role for them is essentially find them work and negotiate on their behalf. And that's essentially what I do, is to make sure that they're getting paid fairly and correctly for the work that they're doing, where their image is being used, that type of stuff. And then to also find them the work. Mm-hmm. That's what I provide to them as a service, and that's what an agency does as far as what we call representation anyway in the business. And it's just it's more of a formality than anything else. I mean, people like to kind of know that they've got that commitment from a company or an agency saying, hey, they're in my, you know, they're in my camp, they're here for me, they're helping me, they're, you know, looking out for me and that type of thing. And so that's basically what it means. There are certainly talent that in the industry it's called hip pocket, but, you know, we'll take them on under kind of like a trial basis type of a thing, to where maybe they're newbies, they're just starting out. They're not someone that we feel like we maybe can get work for immediately, but if they show that they're willing to, you know, put in the time and effort to kind of learn the business and get better, you know, we'll certainly represent them at a later time. But yeah, otherwise it's kind of more of an agreement between the two parties to say this is what we're going to do. And then, you know, in return, I ask that they follow specific rules and, you know, do certain things for me, which is provide materials to effectively market them and, you know, make sure that they're doing what they're supposed to on a set and, you know, being professional at all times, of course, because they represent me and they represent my agency when they're out there working. So,
right.
You know, they have to make sure that they're following certain rules. But when it comes to like the actual representation and the contract, a lot of people get confused about contracts in the industry. Like I say, I have an agreement that isn't contractual, meaning it's an agreement between the two of us, but there's nothing binding about it. And you'll find like in a lot of major markets, agencies have contracts where they're 1, 2 year, 3 year, something like that. And I don't really believe in that. I feel like if I make a decision to rep somebody, I'll always represent them as long as they don't screw up. So, you know, and I give them, there's a little leniency. I mean, you know, there's some things where it's like, all right, you know, we'll give you a pass on this particular time, but right. You can't make many mistakes in this industry because it can affect your reputation and companies won't want to work with you if you make multiple mistakes. So, as you guys probably know. So, yeah, so that's a little bit about what it would mean to be represented with the agency. But
what is that training or kind of level setting like before talent really starts working with, maybe they are, you know, doing a job for the very first time ever, or maybe it's just a first time with a specific, you know, some person that's hired them? What is that kind of, you know, training like, so they, you talk about maybe not making a mistake, what would a mistake be?
Well, showing up late is like, I mean, it's like the obvious thing. I mean, don't show up late. I mean, one key thing is showing up looking like your photos. I mean, that's very important in the industry. And we've run into situations like that before where, you know, they show up and they're like, oh, their hair color is completely different. And they don't even tell me, you know, I mean, right. I always ask people and I make sure, like I say, this is part of my agreement is like, hey, look, if you're booked on a job and you've changed anything about your appearance, you know, you have to let me know. Like, we have to let the client know, like, this is important. But, you know, showing up on time and being able to take direction, as you guys know, I mean, you have to be able to take direction on a set. And if you're not coachable and directable, I mean, you're in the wrong industry, to be honest. And so, you know, those are things that I kind of outline with them. I mean, I certainly have, you know, a PDF and that I put together that kind of says, hey, here are some, you know, set etiquette things and some things you need to know about the business if you are a newbie when going to a set or going to a shoot that you need to know. To be honest, most people that I'm working with, they have experience or they have a background in theater or, you know, they've studied this in college or something, to where they kind of already know this stuff.
Yeah.
But it's always a good reminder. I mean, another good one is, you know, don't park in the yards of houses you're shooting at. Like, it's stuff that we've run into over the years of doing this. And it's like, yeah. you can't park in someone's front yard. Like, that's like, I understand your talent, but like, you're not like Brad Pitt or, you know, Angelina Jolie here. And even they wouldn't park in someone's yard. So, you know, it's like common sense type of stuff, or what I consider, I guess, common sense, but, you know, things like that, that just, you know, is going to be expected from them once they get to a set. So,
yeah. I mean, as Cole would know, you know, a video set is a very tightly run ship. Mm-hmm. So that makes a ton of sense. On the flip side of that, what are some goal setting things or level setting things that you have to make sure to talk about with a client who has hired talent? So they make sure that, you know, they treat talent appropriately and fairly and all of that.
Yeah, I mean, I think just trying to, you know, the most important thing is usually trying to stick to schedule. Mm-hmm. I mean, because the problem becomes, you know, then talent expect, you know, additional compensation when they're there longer than expected. You know, and it's a fair, you know, it's a fair assessment. I mean, they should, depending on how much longer they are on a set. But, you know, I mean, I think that's probably the most important thing. I mean, other than that, I don't really assume that clients have big expectations. I mean, when they're hiring talent from the agency, they should assume and expect that talent are going to do what they're supposed to do and be there on time and all that, and not have any issues to where, you know, we'll run into stuff like that. So, I mean, that's kind of the reason, one reason why I feel like they hire from an agency is because they don't want to have to deal with those issues from, you know, hiring friends and family or coworkers or whatever. So,
I'm looking at schedule with call times and scene times for a TV spot we did a while back with talent we hired from your agency. And I'm seeing 8 a.m., 8:30, 9 a.m., 10, 10:30, 11, all the way to 4:30 with these 30-minute increments where we're either starting a scene, we're getting talent in, we're getting talent out. And it's such a relief, and it's such a kind of a safety net for me as a director and as a producer, and then as somebody who edited the TV spot, to know that the talent that is showing up has an understanding of what the day will look like, what the rigors of being on set or the downtime between shots will look like, how to become prepared, how to stay prepared. I think that's one of the real testaments to working with talent. Mm-hmm. So my question to you is there ever an instance where a client or a potential brand or business reaches out to you and they might be on the fence about hiring talent or working with maybe a friend or a family? How do you convince somebody to work with your agency or to hire talent?
Well, I usually tell them if they want the project to look better and get shot quicker and be more professional looking, I mean, the talent are going to help with that, because talent know what to do on a set. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you're going to usually spend, you know, budgets are important. They're very important. So, you know, you're usually going to spend less money hiring talent because you're going to be able to get them in and out of there quicker. Mm-hmm. And talent know, and I always tell them, you know, it's a hurry up and wait business. And so your call time might be 8:30 a.m., but you won't shoot until 10 a.m. or 11 a.m. or 4 p.m. I mean, that's a very realistic side of this business. And they show up knowing that. Whereas if you don't hire talent, you might have somebody sitting there at 8:30 and 9 o'clock rolls around and they say, I'm out of here. You know, like I didn't expect this. I didn't sign on for this. And then what are you going to do? Right. I mean, then I've had plenty of those calls where somebody says, hey, we tried to use, you know, my best friend or my neighbor. And they just bailed on me. Can you find me somebody in the next hour? So, you know, you're going to have, I mean, you, even with talent, you could potentially run into small issues like that where maybe they get sick or something. Mm-hmm. But, you know, for the most part, you know, the talent are going to show up and do a good job, and they know what to expect when they're on the set.
Right.
And so it ends up saving you time. Plus the overall product looks much better because they know how to move in front of the camera, and they know when they're given direction, what that means. And so it's overall, I mean, the end product is going to end up looking more like a bigger market type of a project. And that's ultimately what I feel like a lot of people want.
So. Right. As a director too, it almost eliminates a worry or it alleviates some mental energy on my part where I can focus on collaborating with the DP, talking with other folks about what the vision is. And then there's also, you know, once the cameras start rolling, can that talent recreate the same kind of movement, either the physical movement, facial expressions? Can they deliver the same line over and over again with that dependability, with that reliability? Or at the flip of a switch, if I have a different bit of direction or want them to explore a different approach to a movement or a line read, can they drum up and deliver a different piece of delivery in a moment's notice? And you're not going to find that with a non-paid talent with somebody who doesn't have that experience.
Somebody that's just showing up that thinks all they have to do is show up and look good and, you know,
and say the line once,
say a line once. And these actors have, you know, the experience of being able to go through that process before. Regardless of what their background might be, they kind of know that, hey, I'm going to have to give, you know, different reads or, you know, a different tone on this particular line or emotion, you know, in this particular spot. And they've been put in that situation before. And this is why I have a lot of actors that say they'd much rather do speaking on camera than like print shoots, you know, because print and modeling work, a lot of one big misconception is that, you know, it's basically acting. It's just acting without words. And so I have a lot of actors like, man, just give me words. It's so much easier, you know, like the still image stuff, like they find it so much more, you know, overwhelming and daunting than it is just to actually have a line. So, and then there's also the, you know, the wardrobe part of it, you know, I mean, wardrobe's a big part of a lot of these productions. And so professional talent usually have a pretty good idea of what needs to be brought to a set and what to expect and bringing options and that kind of stuff. And man, when you have people that have never been on a set or they're not paid talent, they, you know, they might end up showing up with stained clothes and wrinkled clothes. And I mean, even professional talent have from time to time too. And, you know, going to their house and physically going through their wardrobe with them, which I can't do, you know, they're going to show up with some of that stuff, but at least they're being told in advance. And a lot of other talent just don't put the thought into that, like logos and, you know, patterns and, you know, that kind of stuff that is very important on most of these sets. So,
Yeah, you bring up a really good point. I mean, we have, you know, we have done videos where we want the people telling their own story. You know, maybe it's an employee speaking for the company about why they care about the company. There's a time and place for all of that as well. But still, you know, if you're looking for authenticity and some, you know, really somebody to speak to what a brand does, talent can still provide that. You're just kind of bringing that professional level up a notch from, you know, what I'm understanding. I can't imagine, you know, if you're asking me to say a line 12 different times in 12 different ways, and there's a room full of people looking at me while I say it, man, after that fourth time, I'm probably so in my head about what I'm in, you know, the inflection on a different word. That takes a lot of really confidence and work to be able to, again, like you said, say that line again and again in a different way or deliver it the same way every single time.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you, one of my favorite quotes ever, and I have it on the wall in the agency, actually, and I tell it to everybody because I think it's important in this industry, but it was from Elvis Presley, actually, you know, and I'm a big fan of Elvis, but he always said, talent is being able to sell something you are feeling. And I tell that to talent and actors all the time because, I mean, that's what you're on a set for. And that's what you have to be able to do. But it just doesn't, I mean, it doesn't get any better than that when working on these types of sets. And it doesn't matter if it's an industrial video or a commercial or a film or whatever it is that you're doing, it's applicable to all of that stuff. So,
Yeah, I mean, there are times where I'm not in front of the camera, I'm directing the talent in front of other people, and I'll get nervous or I'll wonder like, or I'll get in my own head.
You have a lot
and
of eyes on you,
For a talent to be able to execute that, be dependable, reliable, repeatable, it's that is truly a talent.
Yeah. And at the end of the day, it's to me, I think it's worth it hiring those people to be able to do that, you know?
100%, so.
I know we have multiple repeat talents through your agency that we've used time and time again that are just rock solid, show up, they familiarize themselves with the content, they have some ideas about how to approach something differently. And that, I think, is a true testament to, you know, your eye for talent, your ability to foster and develop those connections, and then also the talent themselves recognizing that they can, and then they're in a safe space to bring in some new ideas or new approaches.
And that's okay to some extent, I mean, but it's not they're not being hired to come in and direct. So, you know, I always tell them, like, if you're asked, that's fine. But, you know, you're not supposed to be telling people what to do or how you think it should be shot, though, either. So, you know.
Yeah. So that brings up a good, you know, segue to reverse a little bit. We talked a lot about the benefits of working with talent, but how do you become talent in the first place? I mean, I think a lot of people maybe have a misconception that you have to be in exactly a certain way, or they're, you know, when they're thinking about modeling, it's America's Next Top is what they have in their mind. But you mentioned, you know, you have entire groups, like families, and a lot of diversity is needed. You need a lot of different kinds of people and backgrounds to represent a brand and what they're trying to achieve.
Yes. Oh, yeah. I mean, in a market like Iowa, you definitely have to have a little bit of everything because you never know what might get requested. you know, the process for finding talent, I mean, I don't know what you want to talk about first, if it's finding the talent or the misconceptions of the business. I mean, when it comes to modeling, yes, it's a completely different world than acting. A lot of people think it kind of goes hand in hand, but it really doesn't.
Interesting.
And, you know, one of the biggest misconceptions in Iowa is the types of work that we have and also the amount of work. You know, a lot of people get into the industry assuming that they're going to do this full time. And in Iowa market, that's not very realistic. Mm-hmm. But they also kind of get into the business assuming, like if we're representing them as a model for print work, maybe they don't have an acting background, they assume they're going to be booked for all types of work. And maybe it's going to be runway and fashion shows and editorial work, or they might be on the cover of Vogue next week. And I tell them all, that's not going to happen because, number one, we don't work with Vogue. Number two, they're not hiring models from Iowa. You know, they've got plenty to choose from in New York where they're headquartered. So, yeah, I mean, you know, modeling is a different beast because, like I say, it really varies from market to market. And, I mean, I could talk for hours about, you know, the differences in, you know, markets and the modeling worlds. But in Iowa, we're a very commercial market. So when it comes to print and modeling work, you know, in Iowa, there's not really height and size requirements, to be honest.
Yeah.
You know, because we work with so many different brands and companies in Iowa that have all different kinds of requests, from plus size to petite to they just want everyday, you know, normal Midwest Iowa people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's the most common request generally is real people. And they're not looking for supermodels typically. So that type of work is not something that we generally book a lot of. However, we have the people that might be a good fit for that. And we try to help them. I mean, we see a lot of guys and girls that come to us that, yeah, we can't market them here, you know, in Iowa, but man, if they were to relocate and go somewhere else, they could have a lot of success, and a lot of them have. But they have to know that getting into the business, like, hey, Iowa's not going to be right. I had an 18-year-old girl, for example, that was great. Like, she was editorial all day, tall, thin. She fit that mold for fashion industry.
Mm-hmm.
I represented her locally, and she worked once or twice a year. I mean, she'd get a request every now and then for print, but rarely worked. And we ended up taking her out to a convention, sign her with an agency in L.A., and within like 6-8 months, she's making six figures. And she called me and say, I don't get it. Why was it that no one in Iowa liked me, but they do out here? And it's like it had nothing to do with liking you. They just didn't need you. You know, just there wasn't a demand for your particular look and age group in our market. That's all. So you could literally move from one state to the next and your opportunities can change drastically, especially the modeling world. Now, acting is a little different. If you're a good actor, you can certainly work in any market that has acting opportunities, but the types of acting work is certainly going to vary for sure. So, yeah.
Do you ever go on like scouting missions or, you know, go watch theater, go?
Theater for sure.
Okay.
We don't really do much scouting anymore, to be honest. I did when we were initially starting out, and that was one big part of the process for building an agency. It's a daunting task to, you know, start an agency from scratch, of course. But yeah, I mean, we will certainly go to, you know, the problem with theater sometimes is that theater actors don't necessarily translate well to on camera. A lot of them do. You know, a lot of them can do both. I mean, they're very versatile and it works well. But there's also some that just can't get over the whole, you know, projecting and the, you know, the stage presence type of thing. And so not every theater actor is good on camera, but a lot of times that's where we do find them. You know, having the reputation that we do in the state of Iowa and being the size agency that we are and the type of work that we do and amount of work we do, I feel like we're fairly easy to find if somebody is wanting to get into the business. So we get a lot of submissions on a daily basis anyway. So a lot of my scouting or recruiting comes from that first. And I would say we probably average 20 to 25 submissions referrals every day from people that want to be represented or be in the industry. So it's already time consuming to go through those submissions as it is, let alone going out and scouting, recruiting. If we do any scouting, it's because we need something very specific, or, you know, we lost somebody that was a really great actor that moved away or got out of the business or something. And so we went to try and find somebody to replace them, right? So, but yeah, I mean, because of the expansion of technology and social media and internet and all that stuff, I mean, people know how to find us and we can find them. You don't have to really do a lot of, you know, old school scouting. You know, you always hear these stories of, I was at the mall and got scouted. And, you know, back in the 80s, you probably did. But, you know, nowadays it's just not realistic. And it's also kind of weird. I mean, you know, just people
approach people just randomly.
I mean, now anymore it's tied to scams because there's so many of them out there. I mean, a lot of people out there are just trying to take advantage of aspiring models and actors. And that's generally where they start is radio or, you know, something out of the malls or public places that, you know, the scout at the state fair and stuff like that too. So,
yeah.
You touched a lot on how talent finds you and how you work with talent what is that process then for a brand, a company, an organization to reach out to you to hire talent for a TV spot, a print run? What is that kind of process like?
In my opinion, I feel like it's pretty simple. I usually just recommend having as much information as possible at first. I get a lot of, you know, calls of, hey, I need an actor for a commercial and I'll need them probably for the day. You know, can you get me somebody? And it's like, well, I mean, yes, for sure. But, you know, here's some more information that would be super helpful. Like, are you thinking a half day? Are you thinking full day? Can you tell me who the project is for? And the reason that we like to know, you know, who the project might be for is because of exclusivity issues. And, you know, there's a lot of projects where, you know, like we just did a commercial for a bank last week that they wanted to make sure that they didn't appear in any other local banks type of advertising. And there's a lot of that, and you've got to be aware of that. So, you know, I always ask, of course, who we're shooting a project for. And I know sometimes it's sensitive and they want to kind of keep it under wraps, and that's fine. But, you know, it's helpful for talent to know who they're promoting to and who they're working for. And then, yeah, I mean, you know, just like usage is, of course, super important. You know, knowing what the end usage of a commercial is going to be, and are there still images being taken, and, you know, all that type of stuff, because it all kind of factors into, you know, what it's going to cost. And then ultimately a budget. And I always try to do my best to work with budgets, of course, because every budget's different. But, you know, we want to make sure talent are getting paid fairly and correctly based on going rates. But I mean, I would just say, you know, it's as simple as just reaching out and saying, hey, here's, you know, what we're looking for and what we need. I get as much information as I can. And then there's either a process of, you know, getting them set up to browse talent online through the website for searching talent, if it's print or if it's on camera and they need auditions. We handle most of the audition process for, you know, the clients. So it's not something where you need to hire an outside casting director for it. They certainly can. And it depends on how the casting wants to be done. I mean, there are still some clients that love to do in-person auditions, which is totally fine. And that's old school, but it's great. In my opinion, I think it's better to do it that way. But now with technology, once again, everything has become self-tape. So we certainly facilitate the self-taping and submitting videos and all that type of stuff for them too. So,
right. We've received a handful of self-taped auditions, and it'd be great someday to sit down with a pool of talent, have them filter in, and then be able to have a dialogue with them back and forth. But even then, the directions that I've given you for the projects, the reels that we've received in return from auditioning talent, they've all been well lit, well staged, well performed, well concepted. So I think, you know, that's a real testament to you too, and how you direct your talent and the folks that you represent to give those auditions.
Green light of who you might want to work with too, I would imagine.
And it's certainly one part of the process for, you know, getting talent involved with the agencies, making sure that they're aware of what that process looks like and what to expect, because it is a big part of it. I mean, you know, you're not going to work without being able to do a good self-taped audition. So I have a PDF of document of information that's kind of like a mini tutorial on here's what you need to know when it comes to self-taping. And while they're not all perfect, it's always a work in progress, but especially the older age group, you know, tends to struggle a little bit more with technology than, of course, the younger ones do. So, you know, I have to work with them a little bit more, and, you know, we'll always offer to bring talent in. I self-tape them, or not self-tape, but I'll tape them at the agency if I need to, and I have a space to be able to do it. But, you know, there's not enough time in the day generally for me to tape everybody. And most everybody, they don't want to anyway. I mean, they like being able not to have to drive in somewhere and, you know, take time out of the day to do it. They can film this at midnight when they're home from work or whatever, if they want to. So the self-tape has been great. And it's certainly been something that we are constantly working on trying to make better so that they are very consistent. Yeah, they're consistent based on what clients are looking at when they're reviewing auditions, and that the talent are putting their best foot forward. And I do try to review all auditions before I send them. But it's easier for some than others, of course. But
And I know Trilex is, you know, we are kind of advocating for clients who want to hire talent for, you know, XYZ project. What are some of the things that, you know, an organization who's looking to hire talent should be thinking about? I know you mentioned exclusivity rights, and we've had a client that was really important when they did hire for a certain project. They wanted an exclusive person for X amount of time. Is that important every single time? What is kind of, you know, is there a baseline for what an organization should be thinking about when they hire talent for a project?
I think that's certainly, I mean, it's not the most important part. I think that a lot of the projects that we work on, it doesn't ever actually come into play. It's not really a factor, and mainly because the companies that we're working with or providing talent for maybe don't have a lot of competition, or maybe in this area to where it would be an issue anyway. It's certainly something to keep in mind, though, yes. I think the most important thing is just knowing exactly what you want. I think what the end goal is for the project and what you're shooting, you know, who you're trying to reach with this, that's going to be the most important thing, because that'll be a big factor in what talent you decide to put into the spot.
Yeah, it's kind of like a Google prompt. The more information you give it, the more defined the parameters you provide, the better results you're going to get, the more relevant results you're going to get.
Yeah.
Good analogy.
Yeah, and I think other than that, just knowing kind of, hey, here's how much time we're going to need to shoot this from beginning to end. I mean, that's super helpful because, I mean, everybody involved in the project needs to know that, right?
Right.
So, you know, not just talent, but everybody involved. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can't go into a project and say, I have no idea if this is going to be a day or 3 weeks, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah, so, that'd be bad news.
Yeah, I mean, and of course, there's a lot of other aspects other than talent, which is post-production. And mm-hmm. I mean, there's a lot of other people involved on sets than just the talent. So that's certainly something to think about, but it's directly tied to talent as well, is the amount of time that it's going to take to do it. Mm-hmm. And it's actually a common question that I get all the time, or the question that I ask is, how long are talent on set? Because a lot of times I'll get a message saying, this might be 2 days, or we might need them 2 hours. And it's like, okay, well, that's a big difference, yeah. right? So, you know, and that's, once again, it's fine. We just got to try to narrow it down, because it does make a difference on talent and their availability and all that type of stuff too. So
I know, just personally working with you, we've covered 30-second TV spots. We've covered 20-second TikTok videos. We've covered a 5-minute regional Emmy award-winning music video. What are some other products and end uses that you've provided talent for?
Well, I mean, probably a little bit of everything, it feels like. I mean, we've done feature films, of course. It's not common in Iowa. It's not a big business here. But feature films and industrial corporate videos, like training videos we see. In fact, we shoot those fairly consistently. I would say every quarter we'll probably do one for a specific client where they're doing training videos for bigger, larger corporations or for schools. You know, that's pretty common request. Or sometimes it's just bigger companies needing to get a message out to their employees. And honestly, during COVID, it was a very common request
because
it was, you know, hey, we now have to have these specific guidelines set up, and we need employees to know what to do.
Mask. Yes. Yeah,
all that type of stuff. So they would put together like tutorial videos that would end up on, you know, internal, you know,
internet
sites. Yeah, an internet type of a situation. Or, you know, we've done, you know, TV commercials and a lot of social media content now. You know, obviously everything is shifted to digital, but it could be anything from TikTok to Instagram Reels to, you know, OTT and CTV, which is, you know, I mean, stuff could end up in theaters and, you know, all the streaming services are now obviously one of the most common places for things to end up. But yeah, I mean, anywhere and everywhere where you can get your video content out is where you're going to see it. A lot of stuff ends up YouTube, of course, but
I bet you really see kind of the trends and in the evolution of the platforms that are the most popular with X generation and X time too. So,
oh yeah, for sure. I mean, I remember 20 years ago it was, well, I mean, I send call sheets via fax. I mean, that's how old I am, but you know, you would know when you're booking like a commercial, like a 30-second spot, and you would say, okay, these are the markets we're running it in. We know how many people it's generally going to reach. Anymore, that's kind of out the window, right? Like, you kind of know, okay, if it's going to run Des Moines market, we know how many people it's going to reach based on where you're running a cable or broadcast or whatever it is. But, you know, now with the expansion of all the streaming services and everything else, it's actually a lot different. Or even social media, you know, and then when you get into social media, is it, you know, organic posts or is it paid targeted ads?
Yeah.
Where is it, you know, that this stuff is actually going to show up, and how much of a reach does a particular client have? I mean, it, you know, it all plays factors that we try our best to figure it all out, but it's hard to know for sure where it's going to end up and who's going to see it. So,
right. I think the variety and diversity in different storytelling methods, different avenues through which the stories are told, via social media, via YouTube, via TV spots, educational training videos. I think now, as brands seek to share different perspectives to make sure that there are different parts of stories being told, I think you're really well positioned as an agency to source different backgrounds to provide like more of a diversity in talent to help tell those stories more authentically.
Yeah. I would agree with that.
Yeah. And What about monitoring that? I mean, so you talk about all of the different mediums on which these are released. Maybe you have, you know, one TV spot that's also ended up on YouTube, that's also ended up in a couple of social media clips. How do you go about, whether that be for the talent contract, the organization that hired them, how do you monitor that and make sure that, you know, a talent is being paid for what they deserve?
Correctly, yeah. I mean, it's a little of kind of an honor system. I mean, you know, there's it's almost impossible to know for sure when and where stuff's going to get used. I mean, I depend on clients to obviously let me know, which they're very good at doing. Sometimes it slips through the cracks. We had a project recently where it's like it ended up on the big screens at Wells Fargo during a hockey game. And it's like, oh, you know, and we call them out and reach out and they're like, oh, we had no idea. Like, and then of course they're like, oh, we didn't even know that it was being, they literally, the Wells Fargo Arena grabbed it and decided to use it as a filler spot or something. So, you know, sometimes it's an honest mistake and other times it's just people don't know. And one of the biggest problems is turnover, you know, within some companies anymore. And so of course one person is in charge of a project and they know all about it, but the next person that replaces them has no clue.
Sure.
And I've run into that even recently where it's like, hey, we're trying to figure out what we can do with this because we're new here. So we have no idea what was discussed or negotiated prior to, you know, when this was all shot. But a lot of times it's talent, you know, that let me know. They're the ones that, you know, I can't sit and watch TV and social media all day. So a lot of times they see it, you know, they end up catching it or seeing something and they always know what the usage is in advance. So I always say, hey, look, this is something that's going to run for a certain period of time. And then after so long, they'll let me know, hey, I saw this. Is it still within the time? Because a lot of this stuff has a residual renewal applied to them. So yeah, it's just kind of a process of watching for it and monitoring for it and trusting that people are going to let you know about it. So, and like I say, for the most part in Iowa, I mean, obviously you guys are like perfect when it comes to it, but in Iowa, everybody's pretty nice about it. Like they're not trying to take advantage of anybody. So, you know, they're pretty straightforward with it. So, yeah.
When we, you know, think about talent really boosting a brand image and a brand message, do you ever suggest, you know, if a brand is saying, hey, I want to achieve XYZ kind of message, I'm looking for a person or a couple of people like this. Do you ever suggest like, hey, you know, maybe switch it up, try something a little bit different. You know, you're really trying to portray something with your brand. And I think this is the way you should go.
I think if the opportunity presents itself and it's somebody that I've worked with before that is open to it, sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I certainly will, especially when it comes to talent.
Yeah.
I mean, if there's somebody that I feel might be a better fit, I'll certainly give my advice or my feedback. Sometimes I'm asked, and then, of course, I give them way too much information that they wanted. Yeah. But that's what you get for asking. So I want to make sure that, obviously, like I said, the project, they're happy with it and happy with the end project, and then make sure they're getting the right people involved in it. So I'll always give my advice if given the opportunity to. I try not to, I don't want to step on anyone's toes, and I don't want to try to, you know, make someone feel like they didn't know what they were doing or weren't going the right direction. And a lot of times I don't even know. It's opinion. You know, I mean, it's simply an opinion most of the time. And so I try not to get too involved in that part of it. But yes, there have been projects to where they tell me, look, this is what we're really trying to, you know, achieve with this particular brand. And then there's times where, because I know the talent a little bit better and more personally, there's times where it's like, man, this particular person, like they have a background in this or, you know, whatever it might be, that it's relatable and it can make the product or the project that much better because of it. So, yeah.
Yeah, and we've talked about, obviously, why you would want to work with talent and all the benefits that come with that. There's certainly still time and a place where you want to have maybe the owner of the company or employee or more, you know, less trained individual speaking about the organization. Is it always either or? Can you kind of intermix talent and others within, maybe it's a commercial use kind of thing?
Oh, yeah, it happens a lot. I mean, we have talent that shoot with employees of companies all the time. So it's fairly common. I mean, I think that one big issue that companies have run into in the past, and what I try to explain to them is, like, if you have an employee that's in a commercial or an ad or something and they end up quitting or getting fired, then you've got a real big issue on your hands,
right?
Because that person, whether they sign something or not, it can become a legal issue for someone if you're still using their likeness in advertising and marketing. And so I know that a lot of companies try to steer away from that. I mean, not all of them, but there's still a lot where they want that true representation of employee, right? Mm-hmm. And that's just the world we live in where somebody might notice it or and be upset with it or something. So you got to be careful. And you got to make sure that you are using somebody that actually is representing whatever it is that you're saying. I mean, you know, there's a lot of that legal stuff that you run into, of course. But yeah, I mean, it happens a lot. I mean, there's a lot of times where talent are working with non-talent. And it tends to work fine, I feel like. I mean, I don't know that I've really run into situations where it was a big problem. Like, I got a call saying, hey, these people aren't getting along because some are talent, aren't. So, no, I don't think that, you run into any issues by doing some of the mixing. And it is somewhat common. But I think most of the time they want to either stick with all talent or none at all. But
and I think you brought up a really good point, and Cole, you can probably also speak about this, is we think about, you know, if you want to do a certain kind of campaign or, you know, a brand spokesperson, and you hire a talent and, you know, maybe eventually down the road, you don't want that one person, or maybe it's an internal employee. You don't want just one brand voice. How do you go about determining that, you know, where you kind of hang your hat and you do want that one kind of consistent brand voice? When to break away from that?
Sure. Well, I know we work on behalf of our own clients too. So a lot of the time it's those brands determining, okay, this talent and this campaign has executed on our vision for the duration we've specified. Mm-hmm. We've populated the market with this idea. We've shared this story. Now it's time to move on. I think in that way, that's more of an organic, self-determined ending of like a certain kind of campaign or storytelling with a talent. Other instances, you want to introduce just a variety of perspectives and bring in new voices, some fresh talent. I think it's just a combination of both for sure.
Mm-hmm. We had an instance where we had, you know, especially if we talk about a campaign, we used through your agency, I believe, a child who, you know, really made a difficult subject really approachable and break it down and made it, you know, humanized it a lot more. So there is certainly a time and a place for really wanting to have a set persona for XYZ portion of your brand, or maybe the entire brand, like, you know, for State Farm, or I always think of the Mayhem guy.
That's what I was thinking. That was Allstate. Yes. The Mayhem guy.
Love those commercials. Yeah.
Well, I think it becomes, you know, for your client base or who you're trying to market to, your demographic, I think it becomes more relatable to them sometimes. I mean, you know, sometimes just having that character or somebody in there to where I think it's more about memorable than maybe relatable, but memorable is what they're going for ultimately. Mm-hmm. And that's what they've done. That's what they've been successful with. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, it's the talent that does it, right? Mm-hmm. So, and it's the writing and the you know, the behind the scenes that ends up bringing it to life. All of it is. I tell actors, like, I mean, without good writing, it doesn't matter how good of an actor you are. Like, it's all a lot of times in the writing, but what the actors bring to that character too. And that's what a lot of these big brands have done. But, you know, I think there's a lot of value in it for sure. So
I came into a project where the talent had already been hired through Peak, and I wrote the TV spot for the first commercial we shot. And then being on set, directing that talent, developing that connection, seeing what he could do with my direction, the different approaches that he was able to take after I gave him different directions, that only empowered me to, for the next spot and the spot after that, and then these next three spots will do, to write even more creatively, to introduce even new concepts, to challenge him in a good creative way and to see what he can accomplish. And I think that's a true testament to how some talent can really embrace a role, to thrive in a role, and to develop a connection with a brand.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and, you know, we talk about some of those specific projects, you know, in the Midwest for, you know, a million different reasons can be talked about as flyover country. And, you know, why would you work with XYZ or company or industry or person there? But you've had some pretty big success stories, I imagine, in two decades or more than two decades of Peak Modeling Agency. Can we hear any of those examples, or do you want to share any of those?
Sure, yeah. I mean, you know, I don't know that all the names would necessarily be recognizable. I mean, Elijah Wood being one.
Oh, wow, yeah.
Started through, you know, the agency. And it was through the gal that works for me. Like, I didn't have any direct ties to Elijah Wood personally because he got started prior to me.
cool.
In the business. But he's still, like, it's through, you know, our agency at this point. I still have his original contract in the office. But he started when he was 8 or 9 years old. So, I mean, he's been in the business a long, long time. But he grew up in Cedar Rapids. Joel West, who was one of Calvin Klein's top supermodels back in the late 90s, and Mindy Van Dyke. And then you got, like, Tanner Stein, who's been in multiple feature films recently and was on NCIS and, you know, multiple different shows. Shay Smolik and, gosh, I'm trying to think who else. There's a lot of people out there that are still actively working. Merle Mendelheim, who just actually signed a 7-year contract with CSI. I believe it was CSI. I don't remember which one. There's so many of them, I think, anymore these days.
Yes.
And, you know, a lot of these, like I say, a lot of these talents are out there still grinding to this day and working and trying to get up there. I mean, Vince Hill was just in the Dahmer show that was on Netflix.
And, oh, cool.
Let's see, Carson Boatman's on a 3-year contract with Days of Our Lives right now from West Des Moines. You know, they started when, I mean, he started with the agency when he was, I don't know, he was probably 11 years old maybe. And, you know, now he's 27, 28, and he's, you know, doing soap operas. But, you know, it's just kind of fun to see the Iowa people, because that's ultimately why I kind of got into the business, was to have people be able to pursue the dreams of being in front of a camera, do acting or modeling or whatever it is. And so when they're actually out there having that success, I mean, it's awesome because, you know, they're from Iowa, you know, and you don't get these opportunities very often. So, you know, to see them out there doing their thing, it's always a lot of fun. And I always tell them, just remember where you came from. So,
absolutely.
You know, sometimes they get a little jaded when they get into the bigger markets, but they're usually pretty true to their roots, to Iowa and that kind of stuff. So,
I love that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And even if we don't recognize those names, they're still making a living doing what they love.
Yes.
They're
you've given them the leg up and started.
Right. Precisely.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, sometimes it's just that encouragement to go out there and pursue it. Or sometimes it's just the direction or a little bit of advice or a connection. And honestly, in this business, it's, if you're trying to pursue this as a career in certain parts of the industry, you definitely need to know that there's a little luck involved in, you know, being in the right place at the right time too. Even with representation. I mean, I represent people that we turn down multiple times, you know, and now I've represented them for years and they work all the time.
Yeah.
You know, and it's a timing thing. I mean, it had nothing to do with talent necessarily. It was more of a timing. And so, you know, people trying to pursue this industry have to know that that's a big part of it. And it's not necessarily a no forever. Like a no isn't like, no, like you'll never make it. It's just a no, not right now, a lot of times. So,
yeah. That's awesome. So let's say it's talent that wants to work with you part-time or full-time, or an organization that wants to hire talent. How can they get in touch with you?
Through the website's the best thing. So we have a link on our website. Actually, there's a lot of information about the agency, frequently asked questions, and an about us section, but there is a link that says new submissions. So anyone that, you know, wants to be considered for representation, we usually have them start there first.
Awesome.
Kind of our initial weeding out process. And then there's an interview and all that kind of stuff.
But. And we'll definitely put that website link in our show notes. But thank you so much for joining us,
Steve.
No, we really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. It was fun.
Thanks, Steve.
Yeah.
The Trilix Podcast, a Trilix production, comes to you from Trilix Studio. If you liked this episode, subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and follow us and Trilix Studio on social media. If you'd like to check out our work, visit our YouTube channel at Trilix Studio. Thanks for listening.